Good afternoon, dear ones. This afternoon, I want to build on the foundation of metta that La laid out so beautifully for us yesterday. I thought that was an incredible metta talk. And I want to build on the start that she gave us and take it into a few different areas, because I want you to understand how flexible the metta practice really is. And you certainly got a taste for it yesterday. But I really like to think of the metta practice or the loving kindness practice as the way in how to train, in how to befriend and stand next to my own feelings, as a way to encourage some inner spaciousness and friendliness around these feelings that feel so solid. So yesterday or last night, Tara talked about the clutching. And I think we could all really relate to the story of both the little girl who was clutching as a result of having her ponytail cut off. Some of us clutched because nobody would cut our ponytail off. There are different reasons why people clutch in various situations, and some of it may be biological and some of it may be cultural. And what is rewarded and applauded for us as a result of gender, race, sexual preference, lots of different things, as well as what was rewarded in our families of origin. But we can really learn how to stand next to and befriend these things. And I remember my first two, what I do with the metta practice is I've learned to go back to those clutch experiences and realize the innocence of that little girl who was experiencing those clutch experiences and understand why I developed some of the winning formulas and survival strategies that I did. You know, and appreciate her. So the very first clutch experience I remember was when I was about 7 years old, and I was talking to Mabel Yule, who was my next door neighbor. And Mabel was kind enough to let me come over and use. We didn't have enough money for sports equipment or anything, and she had a basket hoop up for her son who never used it, so she used to let me come over and use it. And one day, she'd be out there talking to me, and so it's the old, what do you want to be when you grow up? You know, at that point, I didn't know enough to say just, I be. What do you do for a living? I be. But, you know, what I really wanted to be was a professional baseball player. At 7 years old, that is really what I wanted to be. Followed by maybe a cop, a lawyer, cowboy, you know. But I really wanted to be a professional baseball player, and Mabel spent about 45 minutes breaking my heart, telling me all the reasons I couldn't be a professional baseball player and convincing me of that, including right down to that they're not going to build a separate set of showers for me, right? So this conversation went on and on because I kept saying yes, but, and she kept saying no, here's why, no. So that was sort of a cultural experience of, you know, what girls are allowed to do and what boys are allowed to do. And then a personal family experience of clutching for me was about the time I was in sixth grade. You know, you can be a tomboy and get away with it. It's pretty cute. It's harder to be, it's much more difficult to emulate the female role for little boys, to emulate what's traditionally thought of as the female role and get away with it. Probably, and that probably says something about how we look at the male and female role. In fact, it does say something in terms of what's valued. Might as well just put it out there. So my second, in sixth grade, I felt like people were asking me to shrink. Okay, I felt like people were just like, all of a sudden there was a special way I was supposed to carry my books, and everybody was teasing me, including neighbors surrounding me when I'd play football with my brothers or the neighbors, and taunt me for being a tomboy. If any boy liked me, they, you know, said, you're going to have to chase her up a tree. And, you know, I had this tough exterior about it, but I would come home and close my door and just weep, just cry my eyes out. And one day my mother caught me crying my eyes out and insisted. I knew there was danger here, but she insisted that I tell her what was wrong. So after, you know, a back and forth about this, I told her, you know, what was going on. She said, oh, that's nothing, and left the room. That was the second clutch. You know, that was a clutch. So part of my meta practice is learning how to befriend. That part of myself that was so innocent, that shouldn't have had to do anything to earn people's love or respect, you know, and worked so hard at it. And so a lot of my meta practice is befriending that little girl and thanking her for the survival strategies, for getting me through, for helping me so beautifully survive. And then at some point, those things reach a diminishing return, and they're kind of holding you back. And so now I have to bring her up often and say, thank you, thank you. And I think you're not needed right here. Yeah. So I do this with parts of my body, too. I'm having a lot of trouble with my knee right now as a result of some arthritis and stuff. And I am so proud of my knee because it has taken me. I mean, I have thrown this knee around as a cop for 20 years and as an athlete, as a very competitive athlete for a long time. And this knee has been very good to me. And so a lot of times I just say, I'm so sorry. You know, I befriend my knee. And I do that with various parts of my body. I just try to, rather than getting in a battle with it, I try to befriend it. That's what the metta practice is, standing next to, sending loving kindness, feeling the intention of that, creating that heartfelt space of understanding for ourselves. And it has to start there. It has to start there. So, you know, relationships, if you get in a battle with somebody about whose needs are more important, and have you ever noticed how well that works in terms of power and control issues, you know, when you get in a battle with each other? And power and control is a part of every relationship. But relationships that move into the next stage, move into people getting on the same side, befriending each other's pain, rather than having to shut down to each other's pain. And that's how I think of metta, is I'm not in this battle with myself anymore. I'm befriending myself. I'm befriending whatever it is that is going on without having to push it away, follow the story, or anything else. It just is. I'm just befriending and standing next to my own feelings. And that encourages this spaciousness, this inner friendliness. And what could be more important to cultivate in ourselves than the ability to respond with that kind of care and loving kindness rather than judgment and harshness to whatever it is that we see in ourselves. It is so, so important. So opening to our struggles with a generous heart and facing our life just as it is, as far as I'm concerned, are the first and the last steps on a spiritual path, in a spiritual practice. And with metta, as well as meditation practices of all kinds, we're learning new pathways of response and understanding that are very, very powerful. I've talked quite a bit with Sharon Salzberg, and I've had many opportunities to hear her both in public talks and retreats that she's done speak about the loving kindness practice. And one of the things I love that Sharon does when she gives a public talk is she takes on and shreds this cultural myth that kindness and compassion are not only wimpy, but they're things people will take advantage of. So you have to be careful, you know. And so often, that's what holds us back, is our fear, which is there for very legitimate reasons, too. So in the public conversation, one of the reasons a lot of us find what goes on in this world of ours so toxic is because we often marginalize our associational life with each other and even eliminate compassion in the public discussion at all. At an Occupy Wall Street rally in New York City, I read something that Dr. Cornel West said that I just absolutely really love. Justice is what love looks like in public. Justice is what love looks like in public. It's so beautiful. The other thing, you know, La talked about how to go about creating this open and receptive heart. And it takes remarkable strength and courage to live with an open and receptive heart. It takes immense courage to live in a compassionate way in a world that is so burdened with pain and violence and rage and sorrow. And I think of metta not only as a way to stand next to all the things that are going on with me and befriend that, but I think of it as a balm for the sorrows of my own heart, as well as the sorrows of the world. And Law did such a great job yesterday of showing us how you cultivate that feeling in the midst of really, really difficult times. So these are qualities that have the potential to transform us. Now, in the interview groups, I was talking to Tara and Lon, some interesting things are coming up. It's really important to understand that skillful compassion does not exist so that people can take advantage of us. Or that we are going to, it's exploitation is going to be okay with us. The violations that happen to us or somebody else are going to be okay with us. So part of skillful compassion is developing the discernment or the wisdom to know if a particular situation calls for the gentle compassion of understanding or the fierce compassion of high quality boundaries. And high-quality boundaries are the times when we protect, we bring out the, we refuse to water the unconscious seeds of behavior, the unskillful seeds of behavior in others, and we refuse to be manipulated by those seeds because that just feeds that unconscious behavior. So these kinds of boundaries are not boundaries that are set in reactive times. The example I always use is the mistake I used to make with my teenager. You know, I'd get really pissed off and say, it's going to be this way. Feel bad about being so reactive. Take the boundary back and not understand why he wanted to manipulate me. It was a strategy I was feeding, right? It was working. It was working. But when I learned to wait for some calm, some spaciousness, and set the boundaries. Less is more. What do I need to protect my love for this person from resentment, irritation, anger? What do I need to protect my love here? And then I can set high-quality boundaries that have integrity because I'll keep them. And these take some thought. And there are times when metta is very, very, very helpful for me in that situation when I know how powerless I am and there's not much I can do to change anything in the external world. All I can do is change my relationship to it. So some phrases, some of my favorite phrases for those times are, may I offer my care and presence without conditions? Knowing, and I'll send these to you so you don't have to write them down. May I offer my care and presence without conditions, knowing they may be met by gratitude, anger, or indifference. May I remain in peace and let go of expectations. May I see my limits compassionately, just as I view the limitations of others. May I have the strength to maintain the integrity of my boundaries. Those are phrases I use with myself when I'm caught in how much I'm suffering from caring for other people in a way that's not benefiting me anymore. So we develop some discernment and some kindness for ourselves in these areas that is very, very powerful. People often ask me if loving kindness is a type of prayer. And I think that what loving kindness and prayer have in common is that they're both powerful ways to move energy. Both very powerful ways to move energy. They're not simply affirmations. There's something when we do wholeheartedly, we move energy. So I've heard a Christian mystic describe prayer as absolute unmixed attention. To me, that's wholehearted loving kindness. It's just different words. And that's the spirit that we bring to the loving kindness practice. So we don't need to love everyone or condone the harmful. Metta is a way we can stay connected and make an inner commitment not to banish anybody from our lives or our hearts. Now, taking space is often a very skillful thing to do. It's often a very skillful thing to do, to take some space from others to cool the flame. The problem is that when we take separation from others, it's not a neutral place. Okay? It's a place that can fill with agitation and blame and anger, creating only further sorrow. And loving kindness is a way to follow that big self and know that it takes immense courage not to throw people out of our hearts, even when we can't be with them. It takes immense courage not to give up on people. It takes immense strength not to falter in our loving and caring when we feel it's not returned. When others have disappointed us in some way, when they don't meet our expectations and needs. Metta is a way to be with our hearts in these situations without engaging in people with the kind of reactivity that only makes it worse. The loving kindness practice for the challenging person, the people that we are feeling some real aversion to, can embody our willingness to see beneath the unconscious habit energy, to see beneath the changing moods, to see beneath the actions and stories of another person and acknowledge that space somewhere that we share with him or her, that space of a deep longing to be cared for, accepted, and seen in the fullness of our being. So we can use the practice to cultivate the seeds of equanimity in ourselves when we're dealing with challenging relationships. I also like to use the metta practice when I'm feeling particularly mentally or physically restless, when I'm feeling a lot of agitation. So sometimes I'll make the metta practice my entire meditation. Sometimes I'll use it to start my sitting. Sometimes I'll use it to end my sitting. Same thing with the walking practice. And sometimes I just use it as a way to soften into a challenging situation that I'm in. And sometimes I use it to, when I've gotten quiet and I'm feeling that sense of vastness, that inner stillness, to extend that feeling to others. So it's just a very, very flexible practice. What you don't want to do is you don't want to get into this routine where, you know, you're just saying the phrases to say the phrases. And one of the ways to do that is to really keep searching for the phrases that resonate with you and to use different phrases in different situations. And another place that the metta or the loving kindness practice is very powerful for me is with the neutral person. So often, you know, even with those that among us that are living with obvious mental health challenges and that are homeless or living with tragedy of any kind, it's not the absence of possessions, but it's the recurrent experience of being invisible and disconnected that is so painful. And most of us can relate. We all have this need to be seen for who we are. And to have our special gifts and opportunity to bring those assets to the world in a creative way. And so you can bring this practice for the neutral person alive walking down the street with people you don't know, or while driving in slow traffic, or on the bus. I think La has tremendous courage, because I was thinking about her teaching these teenagers. because that is a very challenging age for me. I think I project all my pain from those years and all my children's pain onto that space, not to mention being a cop and dealing with a lot of wise asses at that age. A lot of times when I see the kid on the bus who's got the pants hanging down to the shoes, got the hat on just a certain way, got the music going, taking up a lot more space than I'm comfortable having him or her take up, I start saying the metta practice. May you be peaceful. You know, there are times when there's not as much softening as I would like, but there are other times when I start to feel connected to everybody on the bus or the train or the sidewalk or wherever I am. So loving kindness is a spiritual strength that really changes the world within us first and then around us. And like other meditational tools in our life, it's something that doesn't just happen. It is something that's cultivated and developed. So let's try a little bit, okay? And what I want to do, another version of the one La did yesterday, just so that we get a feeling of how incredibly powerful the cultivation of this intention can be and how it can fill every space. So just let your eyes close gently. Let your face and your body be soft. Let your breath be soft. Just bring your attention to that area around the heart. And just see if you can feel the heart and the breath together, as if you could breathe right into the heart and breathe right out from the heart. Just breathe as though that breath was coming right in and out of the heart center. La reminded us yesterday that if you look the world over, nobody would be more deserving of your love than you. And it was an enlightened being that said that. The Buddha said that. Befriending the things that we may not especially like about ourselves. Knowing we recognize them in others and they trigger us. So first we just try to develop the feeling or spirit of the sense of loving kindness for ourselves. May I be filled with great ease. May my heart open with kindness and peace. You deserve it. All beings do. May I be filled with the spirit of loving kindness. May I be filled with great ease. May I be peaceful. Let's create a loving kindness for your struggles and sorrows. May I touch this sorrow with compassion and loving kindness. If it's helpful, sense yourself as the child who experienced that clenching, that clutching. Bring up an image of her. Know that 3-year-old, that 4-year-old, that 5-year-old, that 6-year-old, that 7-year-old was so innocent, was trying so hard, and shouldn't have had to do anything to earn anybody's love. And hold this child with great kindness. Hold this child with this very heartfelt sense of loving kindness. The same loving kindness you felt for the little girl in the story last night, and the little boy who was beautiful. May I be filled with loving kindness for myself. May I be peaceful. May I be filled with great ease. Just spend some time hanging out there, finding the phrases that are comfortable for you. May I be filled with great ease. May I be happy. May I be safe and protected. May I be peaceful. May I be filled with compassion for myself. It's not selfish to start with yourself. You have to start with yourself. If you can't generate this for yourself, your giving will always have a price. May I be peaceful. May I be safe and protected. May I be healthy. May I be happy. May I know my limits. Now you can think of somebody you love a lot. Not somebody that you have a complex relationship with. Somebody that is a benefactor, whether you know this person personally or not. Somebody that's inspired you. And bring this person into your heart. And say the phrases for them. May you be filled with great ease. May you be mindful and peaceful. May you be filled with love and compassion. And now, hold both yourself and this person in your heart. May we be filled with great ease. May we be safe and protected. May we be healthy and happy. May we be mindful and peaceful. It doesn't have to be one or the other. You can hold both in your heart. And now just think of somebody else you love a lot, a good friend, maybe your partner. Somebody you cherish, and bring them into your heart. Share this feeling that you're cultivating of loving kindness. Include all of you. May our hearts be open. May we be happy. May we feel great compassion for our sorrows and struggles. And let them know how much you love them and would help them if you could. Now you can bring a neutral person in. Maybe it's somebody you pass in the building you work in. Maybe it's somebody who sells you groceries. Maybe it's somebody who delivers your mail. Maybe it's the client of somebody else in a waiting room. Bring them into your hearts. You don't have to move anybody out to bring them in. May we be filled with great ease. May we be safe and protected. May we be mindful and peaceful. Now you can even bring a challenging person in there, somebody who seems to bring up challenges because it's hard to think of taking care of yourself in their presence. It's hard to know how to do that. May we be safe and protected. May we be mindful and peaceful. May we be filled with great ease, love, and understanding. Now let another person or two in. Maybe it's somebody in this room. Maybe it's a couple people in this room. Maybe it's 10 people in this room. whatever you need to do to keep it alive for yourself, to let it grow bigger. May we be safe and protected. May we be mindful and peaceful. May we be filled with great ease, love, and compassion. Now let your heart open even further and let in all your friends and the people you love. Let them all come into your heart. May we be happy. May we be safe and protected. May we be filled with great ease. May we know the blessings of awareness, stillness, a sense of connectedness. Just let there be a loving kindness so that all of the 10,000 joys and sorrows that make up every life can be received with this heart open, compassionate, loving, and free. Now imagine that it gets even bigger than this room and let it go in every direction, in front and behind and to the left and the right and above and below. Just keep expanding it out. It's as if you could cover the whole earth with your feelings of loving kindness. Picture the earth as a ball that you can hold in your arms and take it into your arms and your heart, your hands. Hold it all of the oceans, all of the continents, the multitudes of beings, the whales, the fishes, the birds, the jungles, the trees, the minerals, the plants, all the people. Just hold that earth with a heart of loving kindness and compassion. May all of us be touched by this heart of loving kindness. Those newly born, those dying, those in between, those in pleasure, those struggling in sorrow, those in between. May all of us be touched and opened and healed by this powerful force of loving kindness and compassion. May the power of this loving kindness in our heart and our goodness and our love bring that light to the world and bring a freedom to all those beings. May all beings be safe and protected. May all beings be mindful and peaceful. May all beings be filled with great ease, love, and compassion. have a lovely opportunity to make another transition. A couple people have asked me about these transitions, and what we're trying to help you cultivate is the sense that you can carry this stillness, this vastness, from the sitting to the walking, to going to your room, to moving to the cafeteria. And when you can do that, when you can learn that skill, it starts to transfer over. I can carry this sense of vastness from home to work, back to home. I can put some space around all these transitions in my life. It is possible to make them more seamless.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.